prayers to Lord Nrisingadev. And the prayers take up the whole of chapter 9. And to cover the whole of chapter 9, it took about 30 hours. Just going over Prahlad's life and his prayers to Lord Nrisingadev, the circumstances. Prahlad is a pure devotee. In chapter 10, which comes after chapter 9, Prahlad says to Lord Nrisingadev, "You sent me from the spiritual world, seeing that in this world is a place filled with passion and ignorance. You sent me here to show the way of pure devotion unto you." So that's what he does. He, by example, by his words, he's teaching the way, or the mode, in the Prabhupada's language, the mode of pure, unalloyed service to the Supreme Person. And in these prayers, because the earlier section, starting with chapter 6, 5 and 6 and 7, it's his teachings. And aside from his teachings, then Lord Nrisingadev appears to protect him and he gives his prayers. And it's the message is the same message. It's 100% consistent, pure devotional service. But his audience in this case, he's addressing in prayer the Supreme Lord. Very, very exalted words of appreciation of the Lord's position, his protection. Sambandha gyan is abundant, knowledge of how everything is in relation to him. And Prahlad has complete realization of it because of his pure devotion, and he's expressing these things. Now, as the prayers are concluding, as we're in the concluding section, he is expressing compassion because he knows, and it's about to happen as this chapter ends, Lord Nrisingadev wants to give Prahlad benedictions. Whatever he wants, it's his. Prahlad anticipates that. So, in his anticipation, one of the things that he said yesterday, we covered two verses, is, "As for myself, I don't need anything. Because I just remember you." That's the one of the activities of bhakti, Vishnu Smaranam. And Vishnu Smaranam is preceded by Shravanam Kirtanam. So he had a long period of Shravanam when he was in the womb of his mother hearing from Narada for 100 celestial years. That's a long time to hear. And he couldn't go anywhere because he was in his mother's womb. So he heard profusely, abundantly, and with full realization. Then later, he spoke to his father, he spoke to his teachers, he spoke two chapters to his classmates, the Kirtanam, and he's in this Vishnu Smaranam stage of perfection. So he's saying, "I don't need anything, because my happiness is full within just by remembering you." But there is one thing, and that is, there's others that are not remembering you. And because they're not remembering you, in that forgetfulness of you, they're engaged in fruitive activities. They're engaged in creating a whole network of materialistic civilization in the name of happiness, in the name of progress. The phrase that we heard, well, we'll do it. These are the slides from yesterday. Maya sukhaya param udvahato vimudhan. Maya sukaya bharam. They're engaged in creating a false happiness, maya sukha. And Prahlad, so che tato vimukta chetasa, he's feeling love for these persons that are unfortunately engaged in miserable activities. And that phrase that's in orange, this is yesterday evening. Tvadvirya gayana mahamrita magna chitta. As for myself, I'm completely contented wherever I stay, I'm fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. So he has no need, he has no fear, but he has one concern. He has this concern of people that have a different math formula than he does. They are thinking that material happiness, making plans and executing the plans for material happiness, brings the right conclusion. But that's not, it leads them in the path of misery instead of the path of happiness. And he knows that, so we discussed all these things. Those who don't take shelter of the personality of Godhead, are they under the influence of the modes of nature, and they're foolish, dreaming, making elaborate plans, but they're fooled by the plan making itself. And it's all because of forgetfulness of Vishnu or Krishna. So he wishes for them that they become benefited. Instead of the Maya Sukaya civilization, even if they achieve something, it's temporary. He wants them to have the same opportunity to be absorbed in thought of the personality of Godhead. So, he, the next verse, this is yesterday review, he doesn't want the position of those who are seeking their own liberation. He is seeking the welfare of everyone. That's the compassionate nature of a pure devotee. Vimuksha eko na. Eko. Alone, I don't want liberation. What does he want? I know that without Krishna consciousness, without taking shelter of your lotus feet, one cannot be happy. Therefore, I wish to bring them back to shelter at your lotus feet. No, he can't do that. He wants the empowerment to be able to do that. And his well-wishing is exactly that empowerment. By the way, I sent the Dushtamana document to Shravan. Did you receive it? I sent it. Materialistic persons, they attempt unlimitedly for adjusting things of this world in order to achieve happiness. Those that are not trying to do that anymore, they want happiness by becoming one with the Supreme. That's not the desire of Prahlad. It's not the teaching. This is the teaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Krishna Bhakta is free from kama, nishkama, and therefore become shanta. But the others who are desiring sense gratification, bhakti, liberation, bhakti, siddhi, material perfections of mystic powers, they can't even become peaceful because of that agitation. They can't be peaceful. So Prahlad wants this well-being, and therefore he is prepared to take any situation the Lord wishes for him to teach people Krishna consciousness. So that's just a little review. So now, in those, I went very quickly. Sorry for those of you that didn't see these before, but for review's sake, it's a big emotional and transcendental expression of compassion for the soul that's caught in this worldly illusion, wishing relief from that worldly illusion and real happiness. He wishes that for others. And he has the expansiveness is everyone. The whole of creation has a big vision of compassion. There's an obstacle for any path of being peaceful or any path of yoga system, and that's controlling the mind and senses. He recognizes that's an obstacle. From Bhagavad Gita chapter 3, same message. The senses are strong like serpents, but when engaged in the Lord's service, they become harmless like serpents with broken fangs. Nice illustration. So that he, Prahlad, is not afraid of having a body or having senses that make up the body and objects of the senses that are out there. He's afraid of the materialistic way of life, but he's not afraid of the objects and the senses because he knows how to control them. And the whole of the yoga system pictured here is illustrated. This is an illustration of a Bhagavad Gita verse where there's the five senses pictured here, and the driver of the chariot is the intelligence, the mechanism that controls the senses, the reins, that's the mind. So the senses, the mind, the intelligence, in that back seat, that's the soul going along for the ride. It looks like a scary ride. Because the senses are not easily controlled. And the steering mechanism or the mind is also not so easily controlled. It's depending upon a good driver or good intelligence. That's, in Sanskrit, that's buddhi. And Krishna gives buddhi, spiritual intelligence, to those who are determined and demonstrate by cultivation, by practice. We heard this on Thursday evening from Bhagavad Gita. By practice, in the mode of goodness, of leading the senses, directing the senses towards that which will purify them and purify one's being. So that's the whole of the yoga system, but it's difficult to control the senses. When the senses are unbridled, very, very difficult. So here's the third chapter verse. Indriyani Paranyahur, the senses are superior to dull matter. Indriyebhya Paramana, the mind is superior to the senses, the intelligence is superior to the mind, and the soul is above all, even higher. So that's when things are in proper order, and when things are in disorder, that's called material life, and it's very, very difficult. And what holds one to that material way of life is lust. Lust doesn't just mean sexual perversity. It means the senses hankering for indulgence in the objects of the senses, whatever they may be. Lust in a broader sense. Thus, knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind and intelligence, O mighty Arjuna, one should steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, buddhi yoga, and thus by spiritual strength conquer the insatiable enemy known as lust. Because this follows a question that Arjuna asks. This little exercise is just connecting Bhagavad Gita, the undergraduate study, with Srimad Bhagavatam. And where's our host? You have a Bhagavatam set here.
Yes.
Is this intended to be like a Bhagavatam installation tonight?
Yes.
Okay. Da, 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 da. This is part of the installation. Glorifying Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay. In honor of our host and in honor of Srimad Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is taking this Bhagavad Gita message. Prahlad Maharaj is taking this Bhagavad Gita message to a further refined level. More detailed exposition on the message of Bhagavad Gita. But message of Bhagavad Gita is also very clear. Arjuna wants to know, my dear Krishna, what is it that seems to impel one to act even against one's own will? Like, I want to do something, or I want to not do something, and some time passes and we don't do that something. Or the something we don't want to do, we do. So how does that happen? It's as if we're not in charge. Well, we're not, because it's the modes of nature are in charge when we're trying to be the enjoyer separately from Krishna. They rule our lives. And especially, it starts with this mode of passion, Rajogun. And with Rajogun comes Kama. And when Kama, or desire, is frustrated, then comes Krodha, anger. And there's a way to control it. The mind needs to be controlled by the intelligence. And even the intelligence, it requires spiritual strength. Sometimes, we quoted this on Thursday evening, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. I want, but my urges are stronger than my want. My spiritual intelligence isn't so strong. My spiritual strength isn't so great. My discriminating power says, here are some things that are good for me to do. And I don't, it's unsteady bhakti. Anishtita bhakti is a nice Sanskrit term for it. It's just standard. So how do we go beyond unsteady to steady? We have to practice with spiritual strength, directed by spiritual intelligence. That means we need to study Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, by studying the sacred conversation, one is worshipping me with their intelligence, which means the intelligence be becoming purified. And the mind needs to contemplate the subject matter so the mind can become purified. And the senses need to be directed by both the mind, and by superior to that is the intelligence. But there's a very important, even higher principle, and that's within the soul needs to want to be with Krishna instead of wanting to be rebellious and being separate enjoyer from Krishna. Small thing, big thing. That's the bhakti principle, rests within the soul. And then when we hear Bhagavad Gita and its graduate study message, Srimad Bhagavatam, which we're going to hear shortly, some verses from Prahlad, we'll understand how the spiritual progress can be made. When there is an unbridled mind, we are not able to control the senses. Here's Krishna's words in Bhagavad Gita. For one whose mind is unbridled, self-realization is difficult work. But he whose mind is controlled and who strives by appropriate means is assured of success. That is my opinion. That's reassuring. We may be weak. We may not be sufficiently strong, and it's difficult to control the mind. We all have experience of all those things. You're not sufficiently strong, difficult to control the mind. But it's possible to control the mind when we strive by appropriate means. We're guaranteed of success. We have to continue abhyasa, continue making efforts. And the means of those efforts need to be appropriate. And, for example, it's a really simple example, really nice and very close to all of us example. There's the holy name. And we all know this one. In this age of Kali, the holy name is the singular means of achieving spiritual perfection. Let's say the verse together. Harir nama, harir nama, harir nama eva kevalam, talo nasteva, nasteva, nasteva katyananda. Even our children know that one. That's like really nice. So, we all know the verse, and that means within the name, everything we need is there. All spiritual potency is there. And that's true for any yoga, but especially in this one because Lord Chaitanya gave us the specific spiritual instruction, and with the instruction, the empowerment to achieve spiritual perfection by the name. I was just listening today, Prabhupada speaking in Vrindavan on Nectar Devotion, that Lord Chaitanya didn't invent this phrase. It's Brihat Nara Diya Purana, and he spoke the verse. And so he didn't pull it out of the air, directly from the Vedas, and with it gave this instruction to chant the holy name. Therefore, our little phrase, Haribo, call the name. So the right means is strengthened by Lord Chaitanya saying, have my blessings, take the name. And so it's doubly blessed because Krishna is there in his fullness and Lord Chaitanya's all-munificent nature, empowering. And we're these little people that struggle with our mind and senses. Because it's Kali Yuga again, we're conditioned. But the benediction is already there. And somehow we happen to receive it. We just happen to be in the right place at the right time. Instead of saying no, we said yes. So we're sadhakas. So now, here's a nice picture of Lord Nrisimhadeva in Mayapur, decorated with beautiful garlands and Tulsi Manjari. So we're going to hear now Prahlad speaking about further this Maya Sukhaya civilization. It's a further detail about it. So let's read the translation. Sex life is compared to rubbing two hands to relieve an itch. Here's this Grihamedi phrase. It's not something Prabhupada made up. There's Grihastha. That's what we're trying to be, those who are married. So Grihamedi, so-called Grihasthas who have no spiritual knowledge, think that this itching is the greatest platform of happiness, although actually it is a source of distress. The Kripanas, the fools who are just the opposite of Brahmanas, are not satisfied by repeated sensuous enjoyment. Those who are dhira, however, who are sober and who tolerate this itching are not subjected to the sufferings of fools and rascals. There's this word kripana, and there's the word dhira. So there are these two opposite positions, the miser and the sober person. When there's an itch, I don't know, I'm not a dermatologist, but I've heard dermatologists say it doesn't help an itch to scratch it. It irritates the itch. There's some infection or some irritation that's causing that discomfort, and you scratch it, it makes it worse. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Materialists think that sexual indulgence is the greatest happiness in this material world, and therefore they make elaborate plans to satisfy their senses. That's part of this Maya Sukhaya. This is generally found everywhere, and specifically found in the Western world, where there are regular arrangements to satisfy sex life in different ways. Actually, however, this has not made anyone happy. It's likened to the camel chewing thorns. Has anyone seen a camel chewing thorns? I have. Some years ago, I was visiting Bits Palani. Everyone from India knows Bits Palani. So there was a devotee who was a professor there, and he had a gathering of students, and so I went. And during the day, the class was really early in the morning before the students had their classes, so we had early morning class that had lots of time for chanting japa. So I went for a japa walk, and there's lots of camels in Rajasthan. And sure enough, I saw a camel doing exactly, they went to the thorny tree, and they were chewing the thorns on the tree, and there was this ooze of blood going down the side of their mouth, because the thorns cut their tongue, and they taste the blood of their tongue, and that's the inspiration for chewing the thorns, is the taste of blood, of their own blood. So, biologically speaking, when there is sex indulgence, it's simply a transformation of the human blood, without detailing it any further than that. To enjoy sex life is to suck one's own blood. And there's not much more to be explained in this connection. The camel also sucks its own blood while chewing thorny twigs. The thorns the camel eats cut the tongue of the camel. And so blood begins to flow within the camel's mouth. The thorns, mixed with fresh blood, create a taste for the foolish camel, so he enjoys the thorn-eating business with false pleasure. And it's not just pyramids in Egypt. It's, you know, it's just, the species is like that. So as the camel species likes thorny twigs, all species of life, regardless of not just human form, there's an attraction. It's built in, part of the machinery to help produce more machines. Between one duck and another duck, or one toad and another toad, and one tiger and a lioness, or whatever the species, it's already there. They don't have to go to school and learn it. It's just built into the machinery of the body. And so it's a very strong urge. These four animal propensities, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. It's just built into the machine. So similarly, the pleasure that by nature's arrangement is there to attract male and female to enjoy together is likened in this way. Jamunacharya, Prabhupada would often quote, he gives the whole Sanskrit, but I didn't. Since I've been engaged in the transcendental loving service of Krishna, realizing ever new pleasure in him, whenever I think of sex pleasure, I spit at the thought and my lips curl with distaste. Prabhupada's explanation. Jamunacharya had formerly been a great king who enjoyed sexual happiness in various ways. But since he later engaged himself in the service of the Lord, he enjoyed spiritual bliss and hated to think of sex life. If sexual thoughts came to him, he would spit with disgust. Now, the mind is such has a function of storing impressions, not just from this lifetime, but from many, many, many lifetimes. Prabhupada would explain like this, that dreams, for example, is simply revisiting stored impressions within the mind. You've heard this explanation before. Supposing you dream of a golden mountain. There's no such thing as a golden mountain, but in your past you experienced gold and you experienced a mountain, so you splice the two together in a dream and there's a golden mountain. I remember when I was young, I used to have this recurring dream of flying in the sky in our backyard. Now, I never flew in this lifetime in our backyard. But again and again, it was like, you know, a bird circling around and around. And I never saw our backyard from up in the air, but I would have this dream, like, you know, a recurring dream, which means, I didn't understand it till later, some previous lifetime there was in the body of a bird and it was circling around. And I saw the backyard in this lifetime, so you put this two together and it flying around and around and around. And Prabhupada gave some similar explanation of some dreams that he had as a small boy. It's just, so the mind has impressions. And sometimes devotees have to experience bad thoughts. And the reason we experience bad thoughts is, if we weren't devotees, we wouldn't just become a bad thought. It'll become another urge that you act on, and you just repeat the same urge, whatever that is. you know, good or bad or something, some emotion. And then that's reality because it's in the mind and you act on it. And you interact with it because that's reality. But for a devotee, it may come in your thoughts or in your dreams. And it's just something, it's just getting rid of past residue of past impressions of involvement with the material energy that's stored in the mind. And then it also, that when the mind gets triggered, then the body may also get triggered. You know, a lusty thought can lead to bodily transformation, or an angry thought or a fearful thought can lead to physiological transformation. The adrenal system starts to go. Someone wakes up in the middle of, and they're dead because something horrible happened in their dream, and there was nothing horrible, it was just a dream. Because the body responds to the actions of the mind. So even for Jamunacharya, what to speak of us, not just on this particular item, but some past impression. It happens in devotees' lives. I get asked this question, that's why I'm giving the answer. How do we understand some, you know, when in the middle of I'm doing some service, or even in the middle of japa, all of a sudden this bad thought, I remember something I said to somebody that was really harsh, and I start to, you know, feeling really regretful of all that. It's just a reminiscence. So what do? You just put it over there and go on with the whole thing. Thank you, Krishna, for purifying me. Let me go forward towards Krishna. You don't dwell on the thought, the good thought or the bad thought. You bring your mind, directed by spiritual intelligence and strengthened by spiritual strength, to being in Krishna's service. That's what you do. Here's the next verse. I didn't put the Sanskrit, it's really long. Oh, Supreme Personality of Godhead, there are 10 prescribed methods on the path of liberation. And he lists all 10. I'm not going to list all 10. These different methods for liberation are generally only a professional practice and means of livelihood for those who have not conquered their senses. Because such persons are falsely proud, these procedures may not be successful. To chant mantras silently, to be absorbed in trance. So those are stages or activities that are, they're recommended in the Vedas for persons who are pursuing transcendence. Unless the heart becomes pure, unless one becomes free from the material desire, including the desire for liberation, because that's also a material desire, it's a negation of material desires. It's the heads and tails of the same coin. Material absorption, getting rid of material absorption. It's just negation. It's not transcendence. Those who are aspiring for that, yet have not yet conquered their senses, become proud. And because of that pride, because such persons are falsely proud, these procedures may not be successful. In other words, pride is I kind of looking down at other people that don't do what I do. We shouldn't make the same mistake. We're practicing to be devotees. We're recipients of mercy. Our whatever there is that's good in us, it's there because of some descending mercy. There may be some piety. That's certainly possible, likely even. But that's not the qualification. It's mercy. Transcendental life is a makeup of mercy and a sincere calling effort to reach Krishna, to reach transcendence, to be in our relationship again with the personality of Godhead. And otherwise, they're items that can make one's heart proud and we won't be successful. That's Prahlad's teachings. He doesn't want that. He doesn't want that for himself. He doesn't want that for others who may be interested in higher grade activity. Here's a fellow in the middle of the summer who's building fires all around and doing a headstand to control the senses, or seated around the boys at some kind of a school, seeing the lotuses and being silent or chanting of mantras or something, performance of yogas, sound of silence. You heard that one already. And here's a graphic display of something. Fruits of piety plus lack of purity equals pride. Yes? Everyone got that one? Piety is good. However, piety doesn't in and of itself make the heart pure. So if you have fruits of piety, but the heart is not pure, you become proud. It's a risk. So how do you overcome that risk? Don't be impious, but what do? You need to make the heart pure. And making the heart pure is what Prahlad is wanting for the people of this world. He doesn't want the Maya Sukhaya civilization. He doesn't want this prideful situation where persons are striving for liberation, but their vision is blurred. They can't see the goal. They can't see Krishna properly. This image is attempting to show a mechanical process of meditation on a candle, using the limited senses to try to still the mind. And the candle is insentient, the object of contemplation is insentient, but when the meditation is upon the name of Krishna, he certainly is sentient, and there's a reciprocation with Krishna. There's that yoga connection with the object that's fully conscious, full of knowledge, and fully blissful. The bhakti yoga process is by far preferred. So we saw this other image before, the Bharam, Maya Sukhaya Bharam Udvahatobi Mudhan. But for the devotee, the path is very clear. The path is to go to Krishna. They're not distracted by the other signs. They simply go to Krishna, the real purpose of human life. Prabhupada writes, is to attain liberation from material entanglement. These different methods for liberation are generally only a professional practice and means of livelihood for those who have not... Oh, we read this. This is the same message. And only a rare person who has adopted complete unalloyed devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions with no possibility that they will revive. This message, this is 7th Canto, Chapter 9. The same message is there in the beginning of Chapter 6. Very, very important chapter for devotees, Hare Krishna devotees in particular. I'll just do it quickly. That the context is, at the end of the 5th Canto, there's a description of the hellish planets. The fifth canto has cosmology, picture of the universe from the Bhagavatam perspective. And after the heaven, middle, then the lower planetary systems, it's pretty terrible, the lower planetary systems. And so hearing that, canto 5 ends, then Maharaj Parikshit wants to know what can be done to help people from having to experience the reactions to their sins, the entering into the hellish planets. What can be done to help them not have to undergo all that suffering? So it's a theological question that different religions address in different ways. People sin, there's reaction for the sin, how to mitigate the reaction for the sin. Different religions have different ideas about that. The response comes, keeping it really simple, because of time, karma kanda, jnana kanda, and bhakti. Karmakanda says you undergo process of atonement for sins. Problem, even if you undergo atonement for sins, the tendency may still remain, will still remain. So then go further, and with knowledge you may be able to check tendency, but you can't always check tendency because you know better. It's insufficient. How do you uproot the tendency? Bhakti uproots even the tendency. And bhakti alone does that. Karma and gyan don't do that. Maybe good. Good karma is good. Knowledge is good. Knowledge can help eliminate, reduce at least tendencies. But they're insufficient. Bhakti includes the benefits of both, without emphasis on either. The devotee can do this simply by discharging devotional service of the rare person, just as the sun can immediately dissipate fog by its rays. In fact, this is the verse that I was referring to, 6.1.15. You can look it up later. It's a nice understanding. It leads into the Ajamiva story. Even Abbas chanting, you know, the kind that we do. It's not nam aparad, but it's not shudhanam, it's in between. So that has this power to bring about even uprooting the tendency for sinful activities, or material activity, sinful or pious. Kevalya, kevalaya bhaktya. If one simply engages in devotional service to the Lord, all 10 methods of liberation are automatically observed. Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasadeva parayana. That's this 6.1.15 verse. Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasadeva parayana. Agham dunfanti karchneya niharam iva bhaskaram. That's this verse that's quoted here. Niharam iva bhaskara. Bhaskara is the sunshine. It can dissipate. Even as fog can be dissipated, tendency for sinful reaction, kevalaya bhaktya, these liberation methods are automatically achieved. Prahlad Maharaj's proposal is that such processes may be recommended for the ajitendriya, those who cannot conquer their senses. Devotees, however, have already conquered their senses. Sarva padi vinir muktam tat paradrena nirmalam. This is definition of bhakti. One more verse and we'll finish. This is the beginning of another section. It's another section. So tomorrow evening, we'll start with this verse, but I'll just go there initially. Krishna is the cause of all material causes and effects. And then it's like a whole section describing creation, and Krishna is the cause behind it. Here's the verse. By authorized Vedic knowledge, this is Prahlad to Lord Nrisingadev. By authorized Vedic knowledge, one can see that the forms of cause and effect in the cosmic manifestation belong to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For the cosmic manifestation is His energy. This is a very deep philosophical point. It's one of the four essential Chatur Shloki verses of the whole Bhagavatam. That is, you know, same as the first verse of Brahma Samhita. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. Sarva Karana Karanam. He is the cause of all causes and effects. He's the original cause. Or that is the absolute truth, that from which all other causes and all the effects that then become causes of something else, He's the origin of them all. And therefore the cosmic manifestation how it connects is, the lack of sense control is by not seeing the connection between the object or the effect and the cause, Krishna. But if one can see Krishna is Bahunam Janmanamante Gyanavan Mam Prapajate Vasudev Sarvamiti Samahatma Sudurlabha. So Vasudev Sarvamiti, Krishna is everything. Vasudev Sarvamiti, everything in the sense that it's his energy. The whole cosmic manifestation, as it's said here. Everything has its cause and effect, it makes up the cosmic manifestation. That's the whole of Sankhya philosophy. The unfolding of creation comes from its source. So the whole of creation is connected to the source, and the source is Krishna. All forms of cause and effect belong to Krishna. For the cosmic manifestation is his energy. And if we see that way, then it is a major assist in controlling the mind and senses. And say the opposite. Don't see that way, and it makes it all the more difficult to control the mind and senses. Then the control of the mind and senses is the Ajitendriya folks, where they're trying to do something in a mechanical or less than complete fashion, less than acknowledging the source. We just, very simple, just acknowledge the source. Prabhupada made it so simple. He said, supposing someone says, touch your nose. Real easy. But someone said, no, 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 I want to. But the conclusion is you still have to touch your nose. You can make it very difficult, indirect. But, you know, the end result is touch the nose. So, the end result is surrender to Krishna. So what's the impetus for surrender to Krishna? Well, I like my independence. Independence subheading is I want to enjoy. I want to be an enjoyer of sense objects. I'm a mini Purusha. And over there is a mini Prakriti, and I got my little Prakriti kingdom. I have my little God project here in this world, and I'm the enjoyer of it. And I don't want to let go of that. So I'll do it this way. I'll do it the indirect way. And the conclusion, okay, you know, when I get old, I'll surrender to Krishna. But meanwhile, I'll be pious and be a nice enjoyer along the way. I'm pious. That's what's wrong. It's in the Vedas. Vyasadeva authorized it. What's wrong with you people? You're fanatics. It's not fanatic. It's just recognizing there's a proprietor of everything. And acting accordingly, with love. Not fanatic, it's reality. And that brings, naturally it brings, peaceful condition, as opposed to the ashanta. Bhukti, mukti, siddhi, kami, sakale, ashanta. I saw a video, I'll end with this. I saw a video where Guru Nanak, I think that's his name, from the Sikh religion, met with Srila Prabhupada. They were contemporaries. No, Yogi Bhajan, excuse me, Yogi Bhajan. So he was his follower, right? Guru Nanak's follower. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yes. So Yogi Bhajan was in a really big seat, and, you know, leaned back in a comfortable posture and saying with this hand gesture, Swamiji, you have many followers. And we also have followers. We want to see people come together and love one another. Let's have a big festival and we can bring everybody together. He moved his hands like this. Prabhupada interrupted and said, they will never. I mean, not like he didn't have that interest, but he cut him off saying they will never, meaning unless they accept there's the place of shelter, it will never happen. It's cosmetic, but it's not enduring, it's insubstantial. The substantial is taking shelter. That's what, you know, it follows from the uncontrolled mind and senses. It's not going to, and persons that want to go off into the forest and do something in solitary way for their own liberation, because they're in this position of not being able to control the senses. But Prahlad is wanting to be in the world, but not of the world, and give with love to those who are struggling and suffering unnecessarily in a materialistic civilization, the knowledge of how everything is connected to the one source. And then they can be peaceful and love one another, etc. But without that, it's not going to happen. But wanting the real thing, that's Prahlad. And the indirect methodology, if it becomes complete, then it comes to the position of touching the nose. Bhunam Jarmanamante Gyanavan Mam Prapajate Vasudev Sarvamiti Samahatma Sudolabha. Take the position of surrender to Krishna. That's the indication that knowledge is complete. It's the indication that pious activities is complete. Then with that pious activity, then a sense of detachment, the sense of spiritual knowledge, a sense of connection to the Supreme Spirit, the realm of devotional service. So we didn't go... It is to be understood, according to the Bhagavatam, it's to be understood that those who are engaged undividedly in devotional service, the stairway method they've already traversed. At Southern Illinois University, the topic I was asked to speak about there was the yoga ladder. And one of the images was on the left side is a stairway and the right side is an elevator. And the stairway can get you to the top floor. And that particular building was a four-story building. You go the stairway, but most people ride the elevator. They get you to the fourth floor if you're on the ground floor. But the bhakti process is the elevator process, and it's to be understood when you're on the fourth floor, you've traversed the first, second, and third floors. You may not necessarily have, you know, covered everything on the first floor, second floor, third floor before you got to the fourth floor. But the benefits to be derived from the yoga systems, karma yoga, gyan yoga, ashtanga yoga, it's built within the bhakti yoga system. What's our qualification? We don't have it. We just somehow got some good fortune. Some good fortune came our way in part because there was a desire. That's what scripture teaches us. Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Bhai Bhakti Lata Bija. When Krishna sees that there's a sincere little spark of sincere desire for something genuine, then he sends someone genuine to give that real genuine thing. If someone doesn't desire that, they get something else. They get the other kind. Someone that will teach teachings that will lead you to the ditch or not lead you to transcendence. One of the persons attending that gathering, older fellow, is Rupa Vilas here? Yeah, okay. So, I don't know, in his 40s, retired Air Force fellow, and now he's exploring spirituality. And it's all new to him, and he's like, you know, he's loving it. So, we spoke a lot about Bhagavad Gita, and he wanted to know, you know, I gave him a gift copy of Bhagavad Gita. He said, what's the best way to study it? He said, the best way to study is with a teacher. And he said, yeah. So, because otherwise, you know, you're receiving through a lens that's not just a 45-year-old lens, that's got all kinds of conceptions of life, but who knows how many lifetimes of conceptions of life, and you're seeing through that filter of your conceptions of life. So best to have a teacher that at least has received in disciplic succession. That's our method. then that's to our good fortune is somehow Krishna saw some desire in our heart and gave us the option. We could say yes or no. I'd like to learn more about this. So this gentleman wants to learn more about it. And we also wanted to learn more about it, so here we are. Fast forward a little bit. But that light of wanting to know still needs to be on. Don't turn it off. Don't become complacent. Or, you know, using one of Prabhupada's phrases, rest on your laurels. That's a British term, I think. Do you all know what that means? Rest on your laurels? Rest on your laurels means I've achieved something and now I'm contented that I've achieved something. So that's it. You know, I went there, I got some credit, and that's all I need to do. That's resting on your laurels. So bhakti is an ongoing process of inquisitiveness, wanting to know, submission, ongoing submission, recalibrating our sense of what the goal is and how well we're doing, reaching directionally towards the goal in a sustained effort. I'll give some reminder to those that attended the this past weekend in Chicago, a little birthday celebration. I requested the devotees to think of something that they wanted to do that could, like a New Year's resolution, and then stay with it for 1 year. So I'm getting some feedback. I'm staying with it. You know, some persons that aren't saying I'm staying with it, I'll take it that they probably aren't. Because unsteady is very common. And steady is, you know, there's a price to pay for steady. It's an ongoing submission effort. So when there's an ongoing submission effort, then the signal from the broadcasting system, the Krishna radio, comes in. And we Super Soul and Bhagavatam comes in, and we can hear the signal better because our receiver is continuing to be refined on honing in on the signal. And it enters the heart and then resonates. And then what resonates, we feel something. We get some realization, we get some sense of receiving something really valuable, and it keeps us going on the impetus to go the next step. So that's our bhakti process. And so we're going to hear some more starting tomorrow about Krishna's role in the cosmic manifestation. It's interesting. The way that Prahlad does it. It's a fact, but the way that Prahlad does it is very interesting. He's very Krishna conscious. He sees Krishna within the cosmic manifestation. And he feels compassion for those that are unable to control the senses, and he wants to help them. Although he's just a little boy. He wants Lord Vishnu or Lord Nrisimhadev to deliver them, to help him deliver them. Okay, so any discussion? Well, this is a small enough room, I don't think we need a portable microphone. Yeah. Yeah.
So we have that elevator and
stairway
down from there. And here Prahlad Maharaj is saying all those 10 methods, maybe I'm not able to quote exactly, but is not required. Bhakti is direct.
Yeah.
We also study in Nectar of Devotion that there is no pre-qualification to begin bhakti.
Yes.
While at the same time you're discussing about, you know, dry wood, wet wood, we need some drying method.
Yeah.
And when we are doing this sadhana bhakti, I think we have this, because I'm not very clear about this, that are we doing that drying the wood, are we moving towards goodness, and then taking shelter of bhakti.
I think I understand your question, and it's not that we trash those other things. The principles involved in those other things, not the form, but the principle involved in the other things included in the bhakti process. And what we're doing is the training, the teaching is to do that for Krishna. Like chanting of mantras was one of them. So we chant mantras. We don't say don't chant mantras. We say chant, but the chanting of mantras, mantra, mind releasing from the material dirt and distraction. And we can't do it alone. One who tries learns you can't do it alone. So we're depending upon Krishna for the pleasure of Krishna. The mantra chanting is there, but the purpose is different. It's the elevator method rather than the stairway method. Study of scriptures. That was another one of the ten. We study scripture, but our study of scripture is not a gyan cultivation for the purpose of becoming one with the Supreme. Our study of scriptures is a bhakti experience. We're doing it for a bhakti purpose, and it's given to us with a bhakti purpose, awakening a bhakti purpose, and so forth. So there are subsets of bhakti process. The form may look different. The elements are quite similar, or principle-driven. So they're standalone, they're inadequate. They help make the wet wood dry. The bhakti process, it built into it, is help the wet wood become dry. But it will be less effective if the bhakti purpose isn't like behind the activity of the mantra chanting or the scripture study or the whatever.
Can you say we are in a slow elevator when we are in sadhana bhakti?
Well, yeah. Okay. But here's one of those things that's an issue for devotees and for non-devotees. When we begin associating with devotees, this is on this expectation topic. We expect that devotees are going to be, in the top floor standard because they're devotees. But we find that devotees aren't right away at the top floor standard. They're at one of the lower levels standard. And sometimes when we expect behavior or quality or character to be the high quality and it's not, we feel something, and it's not a pleasant feeling. When it's directed towards others, or even directed towards us, it's sometimes more painful when it's directed towards others. And it's disturbing, because we have an expectation. And how we, as devotees, should deal with that is, first and foremost, become good examples ourselves, first and foremost. But also, Prabhupada's teaching is, recognize here's somebody that recognizes they're not yet pure and they're in a shower to become pure. This is Prabhupada's teaching to one American lady. Swamiji, you're doing wonderful work, this and that, but some of your followers, they don't represent your teachings very well. But you're doing wonderful work. So Prabhupada said, thank you. And as far as my followers, please understand, they know they're trying to purify and just recognize they're taking up the means to purify. So that is to say, see the bhakti within, the bhakta. Now, different bhaktas have a different degree of striving for that higher standard. Therefore, something that I repeat over and over and over and over and over and over and over is, we have a great responsibility to represent disciplic succession and the previous acharyas. So that development of character and quality is a responsibility that we bear, each one of us individually. because it reflects on the bhakti process and the organization. Although we're just one individual, we're not the organization. And sometimes individuals do bad things. And it gives a bad name for the organization and the bhakti process. So the activities of bhakti, that's part of it. And then the consciousness behind the activities, that's the big part of it. With or without the activity, the consciousness behind the activity is essential. That's what we have to imbibe and continue to cultivate and nurture. I have some anecdotal stories about people that have judged the whole organization because somebody over there did some bonehead thing. And it makes an obstacle for the sincere devotees. I'll tell you one of them later. It has to do with college outreach. I'll say it because I already started it. Over there, some university, a devotee of really good character was developing, you know, a good reputation on campus amongst different groups. So this devotee had invited Badahari to come. And there was somebody over there, kind of like a person in charge of different yoga groups at that university, or connected with the university, not exactly at the university, but in the town, the college town. So when they heard that Badahari, because there was an advertisement that Badahari is coming, they said, "Oh, I've heard that person. Could we, in addition to the program that you're scheduling, can we have one connected with the yoga groups? That's just, you know, when he comes, we'll partner with you." And so the answer was yes. And then some time passed, and then the organizer of the yoga groups confided and said, "When I invited, you know, I spoke to you about Badahari," there's a longer version, but she said, "I came to know, because I did some research online, Badahari's part of ISKCON. And that means you're probably part of ISKCON. So, you know, I'm uncomfortable already. And here's this experience that I had with some people in ISKCON some time ago, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But you're not like them at all. So that's why it didn't even occur to me that you're ISKCON." "And, you know, I like working with you, but I'm uncomfortable with ISKCON." And so they went forward, and it deflated her wrong impression of ISKCON from somebody that did some whatever, I can't even remember what that something was, that was bonehead. You know, very, very inconsiderate. It stayed with her. She judged the whole organization based on that person's bad conduct. I don't remember what it was. So each of us were representing everybody else. You know, like it or not, that's what happens. And so we have to be of good character. So we get on the elevator and we step out of the top floor, and there's an expectation. We're not there yet, but we're on the top floor. So we have to represent Krishna and the disruptive succession carefully. It does not, you know, don't say anything or do anything, but we have to be mindful of representing the disruptive succession and Krishna and Krishna Bhakti. So that's part of with the stairway, then there isn't this big expectation. You're just somewhere in the stairway. But we're getting the special mercy, and we have to learn quickly and behave accordingly. And behavior is resting upon character. And character is resting upon values. And values is resting upon our deeply held convictions. We have to stay. That iceberg example that you heard over the weekend. Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you very much. Maharaj, in one of the slides that was shown earlier, there was a verse where Krishna ends with, that is my opinion. And there are several verses in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna actually ends with saying that, this is my opinion. So it may be one way of saying that I still give the freedom of will.
That's not what he's doing. But yes, he doesn't take away freedom of will, that's for sure. But Prabhupada is explaining, even he's the personality of Godhead, by example he's teaching, he speaks based upon authority. When he says opinion, it's fact. It's a soft way of saying it's fact. And his opinion is resting upon authority. Vedeshaiva. So he refers to Vedanta Sutra and other authorities. It's a very polite example setting way. His opinion is fact. Our opinion is not fact. Our opinion is not fact. Yes.
Hare Krishna. Like Prahlad Maharaj wants to give Krishna consciousness to the suffering souls.
Yes.
So we also see sometimes people suffer due to unnecessary reasons. And
everybody.
We want to engage them, invite them for Bhakti Riksha and all. But then they pose as if they are very happy and they don't have any problems.
No problem.
Although we can see that they are really...
No problem. So not everybody is meant to be a candidate for Bhakti Riksha. They can do other things too. They can go and come and be happy. You want to know how to help them understand they're miserable?
Probably yes, Maharaj.
Just wait a while. But it's not, you know, the impetus is not just relief of distress. That's one impetus for pious people. But, you know, you're a pious person. And I'm sure you love Bhagavad Gita. We discussed Bhagavad Gita. Why don't you come and join our Bhagavad Gita discussion? But you know, I'm fine. I'm really busy. I got to take my kids to go to the piano class and soccer game and everything. So, you know, I don't have time. So find some way to engage them in some service. Some friendship, you know, prasadam.
Let it follow.
Huh?
Let it follow.
Yeah. But, you know, we've had this discussion. Maybe not with you, but, you know, in a group session. How do we know where we draw the line with people that we're extending to? That discussion, remember? I don't need to repeat it. So, you're kind to such persons, to all persons, and in a way that you sense that, you know, they will be able to receive kindness, you do that. And then you invest time, along with everybody that they're showing kindness to. Some persons want to learn. You invest, I want to learn people in giving that facility.
Like my conviction and my own purity of sadhana is also related to...
Of course. Yes. You have something? Yes.
I had a question regarding your comment that our mind stores all the previous years of impression. And sometimes it just comes out randomly.
Yeah.
Even if you attend devotional service, like while doing it, chanting or not or whatever, so
yes.
That time also it could come.
Yeah. So it can, doesn't it? There's no rule that must.
Right. Yeah, but like we don't have any control over that.
That's correct.
Thoughts.
That's correct.
So then, what's our hope that during the time of death, it's kind of thought out loud?
Well, it's two things: practice and mercy. Abhyasa yoga yuktena chetasana. So we practice to become cleansed so that the mind is by nature going to Krishna. And then if we're practiced to encourage the mind, direct the mind toward Krishna, and some bad thought comes at the time of death, Krishna may intervene because here's my sincere devotee. So he'll step in. We can't, you're not, Krishna's not duty-bound, but he's kind. So in a loving way, he'll step in. Prabhupada speaks like that. If at the time of death, a sincere devotee is distracted by something, Krishna will intervene. That's reassuring, isn't it? Well, it's just like, a parent and a child. The child in some difficulty. As the child matures, the parent doesn't have to be so super vigilant about everything that's happening. But if there's some danger, the parent is ready. Without even notice, just like they're there. Because of their caring nature. Krishna's like that.
My question is, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says to steady the mind with the spiritual intelligence.
Yeah.
So to me, that the spiritual intelligence is conviction, my conviction in the process.
Well, no, they're not identical. Conviction in the process is not the same as intelligence is a faculty of discernment, and conviction is a force that's staying with that discernment. It's a volition. A free will effort, that's the conviction. They're married, they're wedded, they're connected, but they're not identical. So now, your question?
So my question is, the spiritual intelligence gives spiritual strength.
Not exactly. Spiritual intelligence is discernment. And spiritual strength is spiritual strength. To follow that, what that discernment tells you. Bala is spiritual strength. Buddhi is spiritual intelligence. They're connected, but they're not identical. We need Bala. Balaram.
Maharaj, using the spiritual strength to control the mind.
Yes.
Why is it sometimes it feels like one process, using the spiritual strength, mind is able to be controlled at one point but not other, or in one habit or other? Or also at the same time feels, is it possible for the spiritual strength to get weaker over the time?
Yes. When submission is there, the spiritual strength is there. Submission slackens, spiritual strength slackens or diminishes. Because we're dependent on spiritual strength. Now you permitted me to do some word editing. That intelligence is not identical with spiritual strength, so you just kind of went along with it third time around. I noticed. But both are needed. I'm going back to the editing business again. Spiritual intelligence gives direction to the mind. It's spiritual strength that gives strength to that discernment. Together they control the mind. But just word editing. But we will require both. So if submission slackens, then spiritual strength diminishes. When submission is pranipat, when submission is there, there's strength. Strength to make the right kind of inquiry. Prashna. And then when we hear the answer to the prashna, strength is needed to, you know, to do the seva, to apply that, the answer to that question that we had. Strength is needed the whole way. And that's a feature it starts with and doesn't... Supposing then we get the discernment and then we relax. Or we do the discernment and application of the discernment for some time and then, you know, we're feeling more comfortable now. So we relax. Take a little vacation from bhakti. After all, I've really tried hard for the whole week. So now I deserve a weekend. That's material consciousness. And then the spiritual strength fades. And when that spiritual strength fades, the material energy takes over again. Because we're marginal. We're influenced by this or by that. Depends where our attention goes. We're directing our attention to the spiritual or the material. And we submit, we diminish submission to the spiritual. We're at the default mode again. Back in the pool of Maya. Weakness. Not spiritual strength. So beneath it is volition. Free will. I'm describing this dynamic, but it's not like there's a bucket over here, and then there's a bucket over there, and there's a bucket over there. It's not. It's very fluid and dynamic, but there are different forces at play in our life. That's why language is important, to discern this and that. What are the factors that are at play? And I want to align them to reach the goal. Okay? Mm-hmm. Anything over on this side? Our youth group over here. Some, anyways. Okay. Yes?
By the mercy of Krishna, one finds a guru, and by the mercy of guru, one finds...
I've heard that, yeah.
My question is, like, today you were telling, even to understand the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, one should have a proper guru.
Yes.
So, like, being a devotee, I mean, even, like, even if we have heard Bhagavad Gita several times, we ourselves are still trying to understand Bhagavad Gita.
Good.
Better.
Keep trying.
So... But when people, since all the scriptures are readily available, other people, I'm talking about non-devotees,
okay,
when they try to read and misinterpret the teachings of Bhagavad Gita,
yeah,
and they challengingly, like, you know, question us, or just to prove that we are practicing or we are in the wrong path, how do you deal with such kind of people?
You smile.
They use, like, Bala or Buddhi there, like, yeah,
depends. Depends. First of all, you know, you don't need to put your boxing gloves on. One of the most compelling things is the devotee's character. Even, you know, it's very disarming for persons who like combat. I'm not going to engage in combat. You know, smile. Inside and outside. And so if you become sufficiently tuned into what Prabhupada has taught, you'll find that the statement and the scriptural reference to support the statement is there. Because Prabhupada has prepared us like that. You listen carefully and read carefully, and you're prepared. And even if you get, if you haven't heard sufficiently and you're intimidated, or you know your mind goes blank or something, you know, you can still smile from the outside and inside and say, this, the knowledge that I have received is in disciplic succession. So you just speak what you know. And I have all confidence in knowledge that comes from disciplic succession. You're a very scholarly person, I'm not. I have a heart filled with conviction in hearing in disciplic succession. That's what Bhagavad Gita teaches. And I'm very, very confident and very comfortable in that position. I can't engage in scholarly debate with you. That's not my prowess. It's not my gift from Krishna. You can find somebody more knowledgeable than me and be happy. I'm very happy just being at the feet of those in disciplic succession and receiving knowledge in that manner. For something very simple, it's very disarming. What's he going to do? Chew you up and spit you out or something? You know, you let him do that. It doesn't move you. And you say it with such, when you say it with conviction and a purity of heart, to an honest person, it's very disarming. Just a little sharing. Some years ago, I was a college student. And, you know, a Dean's List college student and, you know, A's in almost everything. And, you know, so I knew how to move in academic ways. So one of the things that I had learned from my academic training is you question everything. It's just part of the spirit of what how you learn. So I was reading Prabhupada's books in that way. And there was a devotee who I would bring questions to. It had like a whole long list. And he would very patiently, very calmly, mode of goodness, personality, would give answers. And they're very simple but profound. So one time I went way out of my way, went all the way to another city to find this devotee. And I had a question at the bottom. It was like Trump the Swami question. And what the question that I had for this person was, I've been reading a Sufi book. And in the Sufi book, there's this whole page, here it is, and you know, you can read it, or I'll read it to you, where there's a description of Krishna's form. Same as we read in, you know, in Prabhupada's writings. So how can a Sufi have all of that realization if they're not in disciplic succession, blah, 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 blah. The person paused. They said, I can't answer that question. I don't know. But I can say this much. I have all faith in Srila Prabhupada, and what I'm receiving from Srila Prabhupada is pure and directly from Krishna. And that's sufficient for me. And my college challenging ego went, ooh, and I wanted to just like disappear under the rug. He overwhelmed me with his humility. Not by his debate skills. That was so many years ago, and I still remember it. And I was in this, you know, college challenging attitude. I mean, not like trying to disprove, but, you know, academic more than practical. So, speak from your heart. And it'll help you to have engaged exchanges like that. Well, you'll want to know more carefully. There's one, remind me, and I'll see if I can find it. There's a Vyasa Puja offering written by Shivaram Swami when he was based in the UK. They had some function at the Bhaktivedanta Manor. It was the opening of the Goshal or something like that. Some function. and he was there in, you know, in the VIP area, and right next to him was a Mayavadi sannyasi, also a guest speaker. So they were both listening to whoever the people were speaking, and some discussion ensued. And in the discussion that ensued, he was, Shivram was praying to Krishna, to Prabhupada and Krishna, to convey Prabhupada's teachings to this person in a proper mood and a proper manner. And so each of the points, and he covers it, like, I don't know how he remembered this, and maybe he had his recorder on, I don't know. But, you know, the exchange between the two and the points that were covered, and he made a statement, and then there were scriptural references to support his statement. Exactly how Prabhupada trained us. How Jiva Goswami did, how Prabhupada spoke, and he, you know, he, Prabhupada had prepared him to meet a Mayavadi sannyasi. Not that the Mayavadi sannyasi became, you know, a bhakta, but he became convinced, here's this young Western person that has very clear understanding of the bhakti process. Now that's Shivaram Swami and not you. But you read Prabhupada's books in that way, and your convictions won't be shaken. And you may be able to say something from your heart that here's the statement and here's the scriptural the authority to support the statement. And they'll be very surprised. This lady, she knows, you know, she's been trained to know the scripture, and although she's not a Sanskrit scholar like me, she knows the conclusion of the scripture. So that gives glory to your teacher, to our founder Acharya, and his Srimad Bhagavatam and his writings and his recorded lectures. Listen carefully, and it's statement, scriptural support, three or four scriptural supports, and then another statement, and three or four scriptural supports. He's preparing us, you know, to clear our path, but also help other people that have another idea or don't have any idea and want to know. Don't get into territory that's, you know, above your head, above your pay grade, as they say. Don't get into a debate where you're being challenged with things that you don't know. Just stay with what you know. But it can be simple. But, you know, scriptural authority. This, like, evam brahmapara praptam imam rajarshayo vidu. You've heard that so many times, so you just say that. I'm happy receiving knowledge in parampara. I have full confidence. The knowledge that I have received is Krishna's message unbroken through the disciplic succession. I'm not a scholarly type. I have full faith that what I'm receiving is pure. They can't, you know, they can't touch you. That has power. That simplicity and purity has power. And whatever else you can say that you have heard, you say that with your heart. Okay. We're done. See the Prabhupada.